Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to drhoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to drhoffman.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about a very, very important initiative that relates to children's diseases. You know, we often talk about vitamins, minerals, supplements, diet. We talk about many aspects of healing. But when it comes to childhood illnesses, there's a very, very important link to environmental exposures. And today we're going to talk to someone who is really doing something about that. She is Patty Wood. She's founder and executive director of Grassroots Environmental Education. It's a not-for-profit environmental health organization, and they use science-driven arguments for clean air, clean water, and a safe food supply. And today we're going to talk about a book called Helping to Heal. It's a book that talks about, well, addresses parents and tells them about things they can do if their children get sick. We're seeing an epidemic of childhood cancers. We know that some of those unusual cancers are linked to environmental exposures. Kids are coming down with all kinds of diseases they never came down with before: lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and many other conditions. And so with us today is Patty Wood. She's also co-producer of the documentary film Are Children at Risk, which explores the latest scientific research linking environmental toxins to children's health problems. So without further ado, here's Patty Wood. It's a pleasure having you here on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about Helping to Heal and about the Helping to Heal Foundation.
Well, we have been working on environmental health issues for many, many years, and we have always identified children as being the canaries in the coal mine. Children, because of are rapidly developing bodies, undeveloped immune systems, detoxification systems, elimination systems, the lack of certain enzymes that adults have, they really are disproportionately exposed and affected to toxins in the environment. In addition to that, they have typical behaviors that are not what adults typically engage in, like hand-to-mouth behavior, and they play on the floors, they play on the grass, and so they really live in their environments in very, very different ways from adults. And then, of course, pound for pound, they take in more of these contaminants. For instance, if there were adults and children sitting in a room together and there was some kind of a toxic exposure in the air, a child would be taking in about 50% more of that exposure, just because because they're breathing faster and because their bodies are smaller.
We actually recently heard of an incident where a family is suing Terminix, the company that the pesticide company, because they came in to do some kind of termite treatment in the house. They screwed up. Everybody got sick. But ultimately, the adults and older siblings recovered, but there's one child who's left with the paralysis.
That's well known to you. In Florida, I also read about that, and I was not surprised. These kinds of things happen fairly regularly, where there are exposures in a home, and the children are really the ones that suffer the most from it, which is right because of what I just described. I mean, you would assume that would happen. So we're also looking at statistics today, and you mentioned a few things earlier that, children are sicker today than they were 50 years ago. If you look at statistics, 1 in 7 school-aged kids today is asthmatic. We have developmental disorders in children, 1 in 5. That's a fairly conservative figure from National Institutes of Health.
And that would comprise autism and attention deficit disorder, specifically, those types of illnesses?
Developmental disorders or neurobehavioral problems. This would be anything from learning disabilities, ADD, ADHD, dyslexia, and all the way across that spectrum to autism. And then we have childhood cancers, which is really what we're talking about here today. And childhood cancers have risen 1% every year for the past 25 years. And that's a fairly significant increase. In fact, it's a very significant increase, with some cancers being more prevalent, like acute lymphocytic leukemia, ALL. And we're seeing cancers now in children that we never did see before. Everything that we used to only see in adults, we are now seeing in children. And children are indeed even being born with cancer. So there's something wrong here. And when genetics can only account for, you know, a very small number, less than 10% of childhood cancers, then we have to look somewhere else. And we are looking at the environment. All over the world at, you know, research facilities and academic institutions. And they're finding pretty significant links in some cases to things that kids are exposed to, what we would call chronic low-level exposures that they were never exposed to before, or like I mentioned, 50 years ago. Our world is changing. You know, we have technology, and we have chemistry, all of this is happening at a very, very rapid rate. And as always, science takes much longer to keep up with that or to catch up with that.
It sounds like you're echoing the sentiments of Dr. Philip Landergan, who's at Mount Sinai here in New York City, who's really an advocate for environmental controls to protect children. He's a pediatrician, and he often lectures about the consequences of the additive effects of all these different environmental influences.
Right. He is truly a leader in this field, and it's been really inspirational to have someone like that, who has such a an impressive background in the medical field, to actually come out and to make make these statements, and to train. I mean, that's what he's doing right now, you know, in his position. He's training a whole new generation of pediatricians to actually look at, environmental exposures, to ask those questions that are so important, and, to add that to their medical training, which traditionally in medical school they have not had.
Where do some of these chemical exposures come in for kids? Because, clearly we don't deliberately spray. Actually, we do deliberately spray bug sprays on kids, because when they go out in the woods, we're afraid of ticks. So, we do douse them liberally with chemicals. But, what are some of the exposures? And is it possible that, individually some of these things might pass muster in testing and be proven relatively harmless, but there's like a 1+1=5 effect, where there's a synergy in terms of exposures, and there's amplification when you get multiple exposures.
Exactly right. But even if we go back a few steps from that, we have regulatory agencies in this country that do not require manufacturers or product manufacturers to disclose ingredients in personal care products, for instance. We have pretty strict regulations for pharmaceuticals and for pesticides, because they are so dangerous. But even so, if you look at a pesticide label, you'll see the active ingredient at somewhere between 1% and 4% or 5% of the product, and then the rest of it will just say inert ingredients, 93% or 95% undisclosed. So you really have no idea what you're dealing with, and in many cases the inert ingredients are more toxic than the active ingredient, and that we know because there has been a lot of analysis, especially on these very commonly used pesticides that are used for lawn care, that are used for inside control of, inside pests like roaches and ants and those kinds of things, but also things that we use on our pets. And pets are, sometimes a child's best friend. They're all over those pets. And when you treat your pet for flea or tick control, your kids are all over it.
Right, and they're down close to the ground where a lot of these chemicals reside. I just will share an anecdote with you, and I'm sure it's familiar to you among the litany of anecdotes that you hear from families across the country. But I recently saw a couple of patients. Actually, one patient in particular, a family brought in two kids. The girl, who was, I think she must have been 11, was suffering from lupus and hypothyroidism. Very unusual combination in a small child, 11 years old. The brother also, by some bizarre coincidence, also was suffering from hypothyroidism. And I asked the family, I said, well, has anything happened recently in your household? Any changes? And they said, yes, we undertook a remodeling of the basement. We put in new carpeting. It smelled terrible, but the kids wanted to go down to the basement and play. There was no air circulation in the basement. And it was soon after that that both kids became sick. Does that make sense to you, or is that simply
a
coincidence?
As soon as you said remodeling, I was like, okay, so there has to be carpet involved and construction materials. I mean, many of these materials contain what we call VOCs or volatile organic compounds, including formaldehyde, which was one of the things that they had very high levels of in those trailers. After the
Hurricane Sandy,
Katrina.
Mm-hmm. Katrina, right? Exactly.
Yeah. And these are, formaldehyde is only one of them. There are a lot of different chemicals that are used in construction materials, but carpets are particularly dangerous because it's not only the carpet, but it's the carpet and it's the backing and it's the padding and it's the cement or the adhesive that they use, especially if they're putting it in a basement. So they probably used everything. They probably had carpet, padding, and adhesive, all of which contain very toxic chemicals, which can outgas not only for months, but for years, especially in a place which is enclosed and doesn't have, like you said, some real good, air ventilation. So,
and they recently had the scandal with the lumber liquidators where they were outsourcing to China, where they completely violated environmental standards, unscrupulously selling cheap lumber to lumber liquidators, and lumber liquidators passed along to consumers, claiming that it met safety standards, and it was like, many orders of magnitude above allowable levels of formaldehyde.
Sure. Well, it's a real minefield for parents today. They have to think about everything. Every time they walk in a store, they have got to think about plastics. They've got to think about chemicals that are outgassing. They've got to think about, what's in the food that they're buying. Is it loaded with hormones and antibiotics and GMO, ingredients that are coming from, corn and soy and so on. They have to think about, shoes that they're buying. Are they made from PVC, polyvinyl chloride? When you walk into a sporting goods store, you're literally overwhelmed by the, by the odor in that store, which is coming from the vinyl chloride and the phthalates, which are a component of many, many plastics, but especially vinyl chloride. So, it's a lot to think about today. We live in a country where, the manufacturer, is allowed to bring things to market and to put them on store shelves before they have been adequately tested for their impact on human health, especially for our children who are the most vulnerable. And it's not just they're so vulnerable, but there are so many incredibly fragile windows of development. Fetal development and then very early childhood and then puberty or prepubescence and puberty. I mean, all of this, but parents don't know this. Parents are not aware that there are these very, important times in a child's development when exposure to chemicals in the environment or certain types of foods may actually, be putting their child at risk for long-term health problems.
Well, the very self-same Dr. Philip Landergan recently wrote to me an astonishing editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine, which usually poo-poos these kinds of issues, which was a clarion call to take a closer look at GMOs because of their potential harmful effects, and in particular on children, and not so much because they're frankenfoods, you know, with new genetic combinations whose effects have been explored, but because by their very nature they permit saturation of our crops in higher and higher levels of glyphosate and other pesticides. Can you comment? You said, you know, you just tossed off GMOs, and some people say, well, why are you against progress? GMOs,
why am I worried, right?
Yeah, GMOs you know, feed the planet, you know, right? You know, that whole thing.
Exactly. So you're absolutely right. The big problem with GMOs, besides the fact that, you know, you're actually inserting, you know, some odd gene that nature would never insert, you know, from one thing into another, but the saturation with glyphosate or Roundup, because these crops are all considered Roundup ready, which means that they can spray them multiple times during their growing period with this particular pesticide or herbicide. And the plants take that up, you know, through their leaves and through their root systems, you know, into this plant, which we are eventually going to be eating. Now, we had a very interesting conversation with a doctor from MIT. She's a PhD, but
Dr. Stephanie Seneff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just interviewed her, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, for our listeners, there's a podcast a couple of weeks ago where we laid out some of the science about GMOs and glyphosate and some real concerns about their pervasive effects.
Absolutely. And she puts it in such an interesting way, and I'm sure she did on your show.
Yep.
And that is that, you know, the pathways to the bacteria that we have in our body, which outnumbers ourselves 10-1, you know, is actually impacting, you know, these beneficial bacteria and the gut bacteria that we absolutely need, you know, to maintain our health. But one of the things that I want to talk about GMOs is that, as always, when you're using a pesticide and you're killing things over and over and over, eventually you will get some resistance. You will get some weeds or some bugs or insects or whatever that do not die from these applications, and so they become resistant and they become stronger. And so that's what's happening with these glyphosate or these Roundup Ready crops. So we are now moving to 2,4-D, which is another herbicide. It happens to be a phenoxy herbicide, a much stronger herbicide that has some real health concerns.
A component of Agent Orange, I believe.
Yep, it's one of two components of Agent Orange, 2,4-5-T and 2,4-D. 2,4-5-T has been banned, but 2,4-D, because of industry pressure, was allowed to be continued to use, you know, in agriculture as well as its consumer products. So there we have it. So we're moving to an even more dangerous chemical that will be used for GMO crops in the future. And where this is going to lead, we're absolutely not sure. We're playing with fire. We're absolutely playing with fire. And this is food that we put into our bodies and put into our children's bodies. And anytime you buy anything in a package, anything that's packaged in plastic that has a long list of ingredients or even a short list of ingredients, it 99% is likely to contain GMO crops.
So, well, let's focus a little bit on neurological effects or brain effects of some of these chemicals, because, I don't know if you recall a classic book by she's not a doctor, she's a layperson, Simontacci. The book is called Crazy Makers. It was a book of about a couple of decades ago that talks about all the various food elements, dyes, and so on that conspire to derange our kids. And then we wonder why, you know, so many of our kids are on Ritalin, Concerta, Adderall, and so on.
Well, I mean, we had this Dr. Feingold, I believe was his name.
Yeah, the predecessor.
The Feingold diet, exactly, who was pretty convinced and had done some research showing that kids who had these behavioral problems fared much better when they eliminated certain chemicals and dyes in the food that they ate that were, you know, were having some impact on their brains. But we're even going further than that now, and we're beginning to look at another technology, not chemicals, but we're beginning to look at wireless radiation and how that is impacting our children's health. and especially their brain development. So we go back to fetal exposures, and we're very concerned. We have another project called the Baby Safe Project, and if you go to that site, it's just called babysafeproject.org. And there's a lot of information there with a lot of scientific backup material. And it's showing that babies or fetuses who are exposed during pregnancy, when their mother is using cell phones, when their mother is using their belly for a table for their laptop, their wireless laptop or their tablets, that the prefrontal cortex of that baby's brain is actually forming differently and not normally. And the research on this goes way back to the 1980s, but a recent study came out of Yale University, Dr. Hugh Taylor, who is the head of reproductive sciences and OBGYN at Yale Medical School, and his team of researchers replicated this study several times where they just had a cell phone on top of a cage, and then, of course, they had a control group where there was a cell phone that was turned off, but the cell phone that was on produced offspring from these pregnant mice that all exhibited signs of attention deficit disorder, ADD. They had poorer memories. They were literally just, they were just running, wild in the cages. And he replicated it several times, and it was absolutely what he thought would be similar to what we would see in children with ADD.
Wow, that is very scary, because a lot of stuff in our environment, our food, our water, our consumer products, and even our consumer electronics that threaten the health of kids. So, okay, we've laid out the thesis that there are some problems here, rather than sowing widespread panic, the mission of the Helping to Heal Foundation is actually to useful common sense information to parents caring for children who are fighting cancer and other life-threatening illnesses. And so this is a logical place at which to pause, because we divide our podcast into two parts. The website is Helping to Heal with a number two, helpingtoheal.org. And we'll continue our discussion in part two about resources that are available to parents, simple, easy to follow resources that help cut through the confusion about environmental sources and dietary sources of disease causing potential issues with our guest, Patty Wood. Patty's going to be back with us in part two, and we'll discuss a new book called Helping to Heal. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.